Chapter 6. Five Clues. The sun was dropping low on the horizon, and in another hour or so it would be dark. Once they had finished cleaning the fish and setting up the new lantern, Thomas lugged the firewood he'd purchased over to the blackened pit and suggested they find some kindling. It didn't take long to accumulate a pile of dry leaves and small twigs. Peter stacked a few logs carefully on top. As Thomas wrapped the potatoes and fish individually in foil, Peter tried to light the fire. "So what books have you brought along with you?" Thomas asked. "Oh, just a few that my mum wants me to read. Novels, or something else." "Have you heard of the Left Behind series?"
"Sure have."
"Well, I read the first one the other night and thought it was interesting, so I asked my mum to pack me a couple more."
Their eyes met. Thomas looked hesitant.
"A couple of guys at the grocery store were into those books last year," he said, "so I've read a few myself." "What did you think of them?"
Thomas didn't answer right away. He was intent on wrapping up the food and Peter was still trying to start the fire. As he struck the third match against a stone and held it out to the pile of brush, Peter sensed that his friend wasn't impressed by the series. But why not?
"I thought the books were entertaining,"
Thomas began slowly, as a tiny flame from Peter's match leapt into the air and curled around the twigs. "And they were fairly well written, especially the first book. But you see, they... well..."
Thomas was struggling for the right words. After a pause, he spoke more confidently. "Pete, if you're interested in this topic of Antichrist, it's probably best to search it out straight from the Bible."
Peter was puzzled.
"But isn't that what Left Behind does?"
Thomas quickly wrapped the last piece of fish in foil.
"Would you let me show you something really interesting?"
"Sure."
Peter shrugged, wondering what it would be.
After washing his hands, Thomas picked up his Bible that still lay on the picnic table.
Peter looked away and rolled his eyes. Not the Bible again. Why did their conversations keep coming back to this? Yet at the same time he was curious about something really interesting. Would it disagree with what he'd read in his mum's book? Setting the wrapped fish in the cooler to keep fresh while they waited for the fire to die down, Peter decided to listen. Thomas set up the camping chairs he had brought. Putting them both close together, he sat down in one and opened his Bible. Apprehensively, Peter sat down beside his friend. It had been a long time since he'd discussed the Bible with anyone, and there was a heavy wall of resistance around his heart.
"All right," Thomas began eagerly. "Do you remember when the Antichrist first appeared on the world scene according to Left Behind?"
"Wasn't it just after Russia invaded Israel?"
"Yes, so in your book, there's one singular Antichrist figure who appears sometime in the very near future," Thomas clarified.
"Right," Peter agreed. "Was he connected to any Antichrist from the past?"
"That's a hard question."
"I don't think so."
"Does he have any religious connections?"
Peter thought hard, but he didn't think the Antichrist had been religious.
"Not that I recall. I think he was just a politician."
Thomas nodded.
"And last question, Pete," he said, smiling. "Where do you think the word Antichrist appears in the Bible?"
"Revelation?" was Peter's first guess.
"It has got to be in there somewhere," he said.
"That's what the guys at work thought too," Thomas nodded. "But the actual word only appears in the tiny epistles of John." He turned up a passage and pointed to the page.
"You know, Pete," he continued earnestly, "when I first started looking into this, I was amazed at what I discovered right here in 1 John. There are only a few verses in this epistle that speak directly about Antichrist, but they provide some incredibly important clues to help figure the whole thing out."
"All right," Peter shrugged. "So what does John have to say about Antichrist?"
Moving his Bible so that it rested between them on the arms of the chairs, Thomas said, "Have a look at chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. As Peter read the passage out, the fire crackled noisily beside them, and a gentle breeze from the lake stirred the thick canopy of leaves overhead. "Little children," he began hesitantly, thankful that his friends in Australia couldn't see what he was doing, "it is the last hour, and as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come, by which we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest, that none of them were of us."
Reading it over again slowly,
Peter tried to understand what the passage was saying. He wondered how it related to the teachings of Left Behind. Thomas took out a piece of paper and a pen from his Bible case and drew a few quick lines to make a little chart. "The very first verse that you read," he stated, "was written in the first century, almost 2,000 years ago. If John is saying that antichrists have already come, then obviously antichrists existed in the first century." Peter nodded. "Fair enough." Thomas wrote the first point on the chart he had made. "Antichrists existed in the first century." "Question two is easy," Thomas assured him. "Is there only one antichrist?" "I guess not, if it says there are many." Thomas jotted that detail on the second line of the chart. "And in verse 19, from where did these antichrists originate?" Peter looked closely. "From us," he murmured, thinking it through. It all seemed very strange. With a frown he asked, "Is John referring to the Christians?" "It seems that way, doesn't it?" Thomas agreed. "If John says they went out from us, that seems to imply these antichrists were Christians who left the church." There were now 3 points on Thomas's chart and space for more. "Look down to verses 21 to 24, he encouraged, "and see if you can determine what these antichrists were teaching." This was almost becoming interesting, and Peter looked at the verses carefully. The passage said, "I have not written to you because you do not know the truth, but because you know it, and that no lie is of the truth. Who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. Whoever denies the Son does not have the Father either. He who acknowledges the Son has the Father also. Therefore let that abide in you which you heard from the beginning. If what you heard from the beginning abides in you, you also will abide in the Son and in the Father." So they were denying the Father and the Son, Peter answered, wondering what that could possibly mean. Were they saying that Jesus and God didn't exist? "That's a good try," Thomas said, "but I think there's more to it than that." Peter read the verses over to himself 5 times. This was a challenge. What did it mean? He wanted to know. Finally, another idea came into his mind. "All right," he tried again. "Maybe they don't believe that Jesus is the Christ, and therefore, since they don't believe in Jesus, it's as if they don't believe in God." Thomas nodded slowly with a grin. "You're getting closer. For now, it's probably enough to say the false teaching of Antichrist has something to do with denying the Father and the Son." Peter agreed, although he wished Thomas would just explain what it meant. He watched as his friend entered point 4 into the chart he was making. "There's another passage in John's epistle that describes this false teaching more clearly," Thomas declared. "Have a look at 1 John chapter 4, verses 1 to 3. Flipping over to the next page, Peter found the spot. This time when he read it out loud, he truly wanted to find the answer. "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming, and is now already in the world." "Wow," Peter exclaimed. This was like detective work. Why hadn't he read any of this in Left Behind? And how did it fit together? "Has come in the flesh," he repeated slowly. Somewhere far back in the recesses of his mind, he was sure he had once thought about this before. He remembered thinking very deeply about who Jesus was and what he was like, but he couldn't clearly recall the conclusions he'd come to or any of the passages that he looked at. All he could do was guess. I suppose if someone thought Jesus didn't come in the flesh, maybe they'd think he didn't have a real body? Or perhaps they'd say that he was only a figment of the imagination. Thomas didn't answer right away. He was busy writing the 5th point onto the chart. "Antichrists deny that Jesus came in the flesh." When he had finished, he handed the chart over to Peter. "Who is Antichrist? 1. Antichrists existed in the first century, 1 John 2:18. 2. There are many antichrists, 1 John 2:18. 3. Antichrists originated from the early Christian church, 1 John 2:19. 4. Antichrists deny the Father and the Son, 1 John 2, verses 22 to 23. 5. Antichrist deny that Jesus came in the flesh. 1 John 4, verses 1 to 2. If this false teaching determines whether a prophet is of God or of Antichrist, Thomas cautioned, then it's well worth taking the time to figure out what in the flesh actually means. In fact, he stated, 1 John 4 commands believers to test the spirits to see if they are false teachings or true. That made sense, but how would I ever do that? Peter asked. Well, Thomas encouraged, the first thing you need to do is determine how the Bible uses the word flesh. Find out if flesh simply refers to the physical body, or whether it means something more. Peter could see that Thomas thought there was something more. Surely his good friend wasn't going to make him search this out on his own. Ah, come on, Thomas, he prodded. What does it mean? You need to get yourself a Bible program for the computer, Thomas said. Then you can look at the actual Greek word and see the variety of ways it's used in the New Testament. Look up every place it occurs, and you'll discover exactly what it means. Thomas' suggestion sounded incredibly tedious and time-consuming. I can't wait that long. Just tell me, Peter begged. With a grin, Thomas looked over thoughtfully. His blue eyes shone. Picking up a long stick, he began poking at the fire. You know, Pete, he said, this is the very topic that Craig Simons and I will be doing Bible seminars on in Nova Scotia. I wish you were hanging around long enough to come. Peter shook his head. It wasn't an option. He had to get back home and run his business. I know. Maybe we could do them together over the internet, Thomas said eagerly. There's a whole set of study sheets on Antichrist that I could send you, and then you could send the answers back to me. Peter contemplated the idea for a moment. It had been a lot of fun studying the Bible with his friends when they were still in high school together, but did he really want to open those doors again? What exactly will you study? He asked cautiously. Well, we begin with 1 John, Thomas explained, looking at what I just showed you and a whole lot more. Altogether, there are 7 studies covering 2 Thessalonians 2 and the key prophecies in Daniel and Revelation. Thomas pointed to the chart that he'd drawn up. You and I found 5 clues about Antichrist tonight, Pete. If you work through the study sheets, you'll find at least 25. Once you have that, then you'll be able to determine exactly who or what Antichrist is. Determine who he is? Peter echoed in confusion. You mean you'll actually identify someone in the world today? Thomas nodded with enthusiasm. Yes, without a shadow of doubt. It will be abundantly obvious. Peter sighed deeply. He was confused, but he was also intrigued. He examined the chart that Thomas had given him, and then he asked, But how can the Antichrist in John's day be connected to the one in the future? Hesitantly, Thomas replied, It's no fun if I tell you all the answers. The best part about Bible study is discovering the truth for yourself. Just keep that little chart and think about it. The logs had become glowing red embers, and Thomas set his Bible on the picnic table and walked over to the cooler. As he brought over the foil-covered food, Peter dug holes in the hot ash with the long stick. It only took a few minutes to bury the fish and potatoes. Across the lake, Peter noticed a faint pink blush spreading from one cloud to another. The sun was setting, and soon it would be dark. Hey, do you want to watch the sunset? Thomas inquired. I know the perfect spot. Once dinner was cooking, they climbed up a steep bank of rocks and scurried through a maze of trees. The path that Thomas took led them to a huge flat rock that jutted out into the lake. From there, the view was uncluttered. A soft, balmy breeze blew off the water, ruffling Peter's straight, tawny brown hair and rippling across Thomas's blue T-shirt. Everything was peacefully quiet until a lonely, haunting cry echoed across the lake. The two friends watched as a slim black loon flapped its wings hard against the water for several meters before rising up into the air. Sparkling water droplets flew out in all directions. For a while, Peter and Thomas sat in silence, enjoying their tranquil surroundings. Neither had had much time to relax leading up to this weekend, and both treasured the calm. Peter was the first one to speak. So you're going to be married in a week from now, he stated with a laugh of disbelief. In fact, right about now you'll probably be heading off on your honeymoon. God willing, Thomas smiled. That'll be one happy day. I can't believe you're marrying Purity Henderson, Peter admitted. I'd never have guessed it would happen, at least not 10 years ago. Why? Because we were so different. Exactly, Peter exclaimed. And they had been. Over the years, Peter had gradually witnessed the changes in Thomas, even if it had only been from their conversations on the phone. But he still remembered Purity as the girl he had known in high school, quiet, shy and timid, and very, very proper. "We've both changed, Pete. We've changed a lot," Thomas expressed earnestly, "and God has everything to do with it. Purity and I bring out the best in each other." The sky was streaked with brilliant reds and orange. Bright golden rays slanted up in one last parting wave from the sun. As the two friends mused for a while on the good old days, the colour gradually subsided and twilight settled in. By the time they tried to pick their way back to the campsite, it was getting hard to see. They were both thankful to find the lantern. "Man, that thing sheds a lot of light," Thomas remarked, once Peter had got it going. "I'll have to get one of those before Purity and I go camping."
You might want to check your wedding presents before you do that," Peter grinned, thinking of the two gifts he had at home for his friend.
Thomas laughed. "You're a good guy, Pete." When the lantern was burning brightly, dinner was ready. Fish and potatoes had never tasted so good. For a while, their conversation remained light and easy. Thomas had plenty of funny stories from his grocery store days, plus the knack for telling a joke, and Peter shared a few of his own. Their laughter rang out across the still water, time after time. It was close to midnight when they decided to sleep outdoors on a tarp instead of inside the stuffy confines of their tent. Because it was late in the year, there were hardly any mosquitoes to worry about, and the sky was full of stars, so they weren't concerned about rain. However, the evening air had cooled substantially, and Peter decided to stir up the coals and throw a couple more logs on the fire. When that was done, he crawled inside his sleeping bag and pulled his pillow up under his arms. Looking over at Thomas, he hoped their conversation would continue. Thomas turned sideways in his sleeping bag and rested his head on his arm. "So tell me, Pete," he prompted in a serious tone, "since you still haven't found anyone, what kind of a girl are you looking for these days?" Peter shrugged. "I don't know," he admitted. "Someone gorgeous and fun, I guess." There was no answer from Thomas. Peter looked over to see if he'd heard. It was the kind of response that Peter's friends at home would have accepted, but Thomas didn't laugh in agreement as they would have. Thomas was so different from Peter's mates in Australia, but it was a difference that Peter respected. "Is that what you saw in my sister?" Thomas asked quietly, looking out across the lake. "Verity? Gorgeous and fun?" Thomas's question made Peter think, and think hard. There was no doubt that she'd been pretty enough, but was that what had attracted him? What had been so captivating about his best friend's sister? The more Peter thought about it, the more he realized that whatever it was, he'd never tried to put it in words. They talked for a while longer, and Thomas shared some of the qualities he'd come to appreciate in Purity. It was a whole different way of thinking from what Peter had become accustomed to. Slowly, he began to comprehend the reasons why Thomas had made the choice that he had. When at last they said good night, Peter lay in the darkness thinking about all the things they'd discussed that day. Thomas had given him so much to think about that Peter's mind was racing. He knew he was going to have a hard time winding down. After a little while, Peter looked over to see if his friend was asleep already, and to his great surprise he saw that Thomas was praying. Praying. With a bowed head and hands clasped, Thomas was silently whispering a prayer to God. How Peter wished he knew what his friend was saying. A strange kind of envy began to fill his heart. It wasn't an envy that could lead to hate or anger, but it was one that could easily lead to tears. Thomas was talking to God. Thomas believed that God cared for him, like a father for a son. Thomas had a quiet, gentle confidence that Peter admired and yearned after, but he had no idea how it could be obtained. In a sense, Peter knew they'd changed places in life. When they had first met in grade 12, Peter had been a cheerful, easygoing Christian, while Thomas was the son of an alcoholic, filled with bitterness and hate. Since the move to Ontario had been forced upon him in his last year of high school, Thomas had left several good friends behind. Besides that, years of poverty and disappointment weren't easy for him to forget. Peter could vividly recall walking into his grade 12 math class on the first day of school and seeing a new kid at the back, slouched down in his chair. Thomas's cap had covered his eyes and his arms had been folded together in a very determined way. For weeks he'd been totally unresponsive to anything that anyone said or did, completely aloof. Everything about him indicated that he wasn't likely to be much of a friend. Ironically, it had taken a nasty fistfight to change their whole relationship, and Peter's nose had never been quite the same. Now here they were, outside on a cool summer night, 10 years later, and Thomas was kneeling in prayer to God. He'd changed so much. Now he was the one trying to help Peter. And out of all the friends that Peter had, he knew there wasn't anyone as kind or as thoughtful as Thomas Lovell. Shamefully, Peter acknowledged that now he was the one with the anger and the grudge. Only his bitterness wasn't directed against his dad or his friends. It was directed against God. Long after Thomas finished his prayer, Peter was still lying wide awake, looking over the tranquil lake, and trying to suppress the feelings that tore him up inside. Why was it so hard for him to get over the pain? Thomas had lost both a father and a sister, and yet somehow he was reconciled to a God that he wanted to serve, a God that he obviously trusted and loved very much. Thomas wasn't weighed down with self-pity and remorse for the past. He was full of desire to help and to give. And he had faith, a quality that Peter had scoffed at many times since Verity's death, a quality that he felt was impossible to develop. How had Thomas gained it? What did Thomas understand about God that Peter didn't? Surely Thomas had once asked the same questions that Peter struggled with day after day. But somehow Thomas had found satisfactory answers and Peter hadn't. Peter could only envy his friend's peace of mind. Looking up at the bright little stars in the dark night sky, Peter thought about the way his friend was now so familiar with the Bible. Enthusiasm had radiated from Thomas's face when he was talking about the clues from 1 John. This was an exciting topic to Thomas. It wasn't just a boring list of facts. Religion was motivating his life. But was he right? And did those 5 clues he'd written down contradict the basic teachings of Left Behind? Or was there another way to see it? Maybe Thomas was mixed up. He was, after all, only a grocery store manager, not a doctor of theology. It seemed more probable to Peter that there had been antichrists in John's day, and there was still one to come, a different one. If Left Behind had sold millions of copies, as was proclaimed on the front cover, surely the books were reasonably accurate, and surely his brother Andrew wouldn't promote a book that wasn't scripturally sound. Pastor Andrew Bright was a recognized authority on religious matters. He had a theological degree. His church was one of the largest in the Maritimes. His whole life revolved around leading people to God. Surely Andrew would know if the books were promoting error? Before Peter closed his eyes in sleep that night, he resolved to investigate the subject a little further. There was one door he would choose to open, just wide enough to sort the matter out. After all, there was a good chance this issue might impact his own life one day, unless both Thomas and Left Behind were wrong.